We're glad you're joining us here at Common Thread Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts. This lesson's been going on for a while now. So here's what we've seen. Knowing our deeper desires, that works. Now, it is not easy for human beings to discern our true desires. We tend to settle for desires that we pick up from family or media or culture or social class. Hacking our brain's dopamine motivation cycle, that works too. Using positive rather than negative emotion, that brings about change. Gentleness works better than harshness. We spent 3 weeks talking about that. And then last week, failure. Properly processed, failure is one of the best ways that we change. Now, improperly processed, no help at all, actually can make things worse. So if you missed any of that, you can have a listen online. Today we start the last section of the lesson, What Doesn't Work. And here's the bottom line of today. Willpower. Willpower doesn't work. Resolve and commitment, they don't work. Now, they don't work because, as you've been hearing me say, big changes are actually a series of small changes. One tiny change lays the foundation for the next tiny change, which lays the foundation for the next tiny change, and so forth, and so forth, and so forth, making deep change a marathon endeavor. But here's the thing. Willpower is a sprint capacity. You apply a sprint capacity to a marathon endeavor, it doesn't work. You know how willpower goes. You get all motivated to do something. I swear I'm going to do it this time. And then, 3 days. And then, resolve is a fickle companion. Willpower is unreliable. It is not there when you need it most. Now, you may have, I have, fallen into this trap. Assuming that resolve will bring about deep change, again, it was never going to work. But assuming that it does, we try it. And then, when it doesn't work, as it was never going to work, we beat ourselves up. Oh, I'm so weak. Ah, oh, something's wrong with me. Ah, oh, I'm just bad. Well, I hope today's lesson will relieve some of that unnecessary self-scourging. Because applying willpower to long-term change, it's not moral failure, it's just uninformed. It's a misapplication of resources, and it's a pretty common one at that. We make the mistake because sometimes some motivations are so deep and so primal that resolve does stick. For example, it is common for teenagers to be deeply motivated to fit in with their peer group. It feels to them like it's developmental do or die, some prime motivation inside, so they do sustain commitment over time to get the right clothes and use the right words and get the right hair and drive the right car. Or grandparents, often so primally motivated, I know this from experience, to spend time with their grandkids that they do rearrange their lives, and they do it again and again and again. Sometimes they move. They push through their tiredness. All the time they push through their tiredness to show up and show up and show up. Some primal drives do sustain willpower over time. And so we commonly make the mistake of assuming that that's going to work in other settings when it doesn't. We way overestimate the power of willpower to make change. You know how it works from experience. Resolve fluctuates. And it fluctuates minute by minute. It fluctuates day to day. It can be snuffed out by the slightest thing, a smell of something delicious, or a passing remark that's discouraging, or a memory that comes up and poof, that thing that we swore to ourselves, this time, it's gone. Willpower is unreliable. It is scattershot at best. It comes and it goes. What it doesn't do, one tiny change laying the foundation for the next tiny change and the next and the next. What it doesn't do, sustained commitment over time. Now, that doesn't mean that will or resolve are not important. They are. But they just don't last very long. They're like waves. They come up, they rise, they crest, and then they fall. So we have got to be very careful how we use this very rare resource, willpower. We only get a little bit of it, and it only lasts for a little bit of time. So we've got to use it for what it is and use it for what it can do. Will and resolve and determination, they are important, but they're important the way that a compass is important. They can get us going in the right direction, but they can't do much more than that because they go away. They just do. Now, they will be back, and when they are, they can confirm that direction or they can modify that direction for us, which is, again, very important. But what it's not is any kind of resource at all for the long haul. They can help us clarify our aspirations, but they cannot sustain the behaviors that will actually attain those aspirations. So, say we tap into a deep desire. When we do, it's not uncommon to have rise up inside of us a surge of motivation, a surge of willpower, a surge of commitment. Up they come. Well, what that does is gets us pointed toward change. Well, thank you, motivation. That was very helpful. You helped surface and clarify and define and point us toward some important aspiration. But that's all they do. They get us pointed in a direction. They don't stay around long enough to help us change. We use willpower for right now kinds of things. Again, that's what you do with a sprint. It's a right now kind of thing. Here's an example. Willpower can get you to read for 7 minutes right now. That's a behavior. What it cannot get us to is, you know, I really want to read more. No, that's an aspiration. Willpower can get us to leave our phone in the other room. That's a behavior. It can't get us to, you know, I want to spend more quality time with my loved ones. Again, that's an aspiration. We aspire to get better sleep, to get in better shape, to be a more patient parent, to be more honest, and will resolve will help us aspire to those things, but it will not help us get there. They don't help us execute the hundreds, the thousands of individual behaviors in that same direction. They do not do that. Motivation won't take us there. That requires a fundamentally different mechanism. But despair not, my friends, for we have that fundamentally different mechanism. That mechanism is the power of environment. The power of environment to shape us. It is difficult to overestimate how powerfully our environment shapes our lives. It's difficult to know where the one starts and the other stops. But our problem is we squander the little bit of willpower we get and we do not spend it shaping our environment in ways that will shape us the way we want to be shaped. Change uses willpower in a very indirect way. We way overestimate the power of motivation to create change. We way underestimate the power of the environment we live in. It's kind of a truism that if you don't shape your environment will shape you and will do so without any input from you. Now, our ancient wisdom understood this dynamic. One of our proverbs says, "Walk with wise people and you're going to get wise. Walk with fools and you're going to suffer harm right along with them." If we don't shape our environment will shape us, and again, without consulting us. Now, I've been throwing notes in a file for this lesson for a long time, so I can't find where I read this, but it's an experiment. It's an experiment with fleas in a jar. No surprise, put fleas in a jar, they jump out. But put a glass lid on top of the jar, they jump up, they hit the lid, they fall down. 3 days of that, and you can take the lid off, and they won't jump out. But here's the really weird part. Their offspring won't jump out either. Environment either creates a collective learning environment, or more likely, it flips an epigenetic switch, and environmental change gets encoded in us. There's plenty of research into that happening in us. Again, we way underestimate the power of environment for change. Now, folks who study our brains break down how it happens, and they've learned quite a lot about it, about how our hardwiring functions in that arena. Change is, as we all know, the result of our behaviors, the result of our choices, our actions. Sure it is, but those behaviors, those choices, those actions, they come from somewhere. Well, we talk a lot about this. They come from our beliefs. They come from our values. They come from the stories that we tell ourselves. But here's the thing for today. Those deep stories that we tell ourselves are profoundly shaped by our environment. We're not unlike fleas in that regard. Now, a few years ago, I suggested this book, Predictably Irrational, Hidden Forces That Shape Our Decisions. Now, I suggested it for several reasons, and one of those reasons was to alert us to how much our environment affects us. There's a story I remember in the book, an experiment on cheating. Participants were given a written test and told that they would get cash for every right answer they got on the test. The experiment made it very easy to cheat, but before starting, the experimenters asked one group to list 10 books that they'd read in high school, and they asked the other group to list as many of the Ten Commandments as they could remember. Now, it turns out being reminded of a moral code, even if they couldn't remember the commandments in the moral code, just that reminder changed the results of the test. The first group, the high school books group, they cheated significantly more than the second group. Now, in another run of the experiment, they didn't even ask them to list the 10. They just put the 10 commandments on the wall somewhere in the test room, or they didn't. And again, it profoundly affected the rates of cheating. Again, we way underestimate the power of environment to affect change in us. And I think it was in that same book, another experiment, this one out of Princeton. The title of the study is Situational Variables in Behavior, or, to paraphrase, Don't Underestimate the Power of Environment. A bunch of seminarians were recruited to give a talk. One group was asked to give a talk about the school. The other was asked to give a talk about the Good Samaritan, a well-known Jesus story about helping people. They ran a bunch of control experiments in one building, and then they sent them to another building to actually give the talk. And on their way to the other building, they positioned a man slumped in an alleyway, clearly not doing well, the exact scenario as the Good Samaritan story. And as they walked by, the actor moaned, he coughed twice, and then he slumped down. Now, the group that was giving the talk on the Good Samaritan, they were no more likely to help this guy than the other group. But here's what did change the rate at which they helped this man. In both groups, if they were hurried, the students were less likely to help than if they were not hurried. If their environment was rushed, if the group was told, as one of them was, man, you're running late, you need to get over there as quick as you can, they didn't help nearly as much as those who were told, no, you got plenty of time, make your way over there. We way underestimate the power of environment to affect change. Now, there are lots of studies about this. That book I suggested at the beginning of this lesson, Tiny Habits, it has several of them if you're interested. But for us, thinking about how change happens, here's where I think we should focus. We only get a small amount of will. We only get a small amount of motivation. We only get a small amount of resolve. And that little bit is totally inadequate for sustaining long-term change. But if we use that little bit of motivation that we get to reshape our environments in ways that will influence us toward the big changes we desire, we can experience profound change. One incremental change at a time, over time. We can, because when it comes to change, that works. Now, this lesson has been interconnected. Remember the beginning I just mentioned a moment ago? We settle for secondhand desires, desires imposed on us by culture, class, family, friends. That really is the first rung on the ladder to substantive change. We can't really go on to hacking the dopamine reward cycle. We can't really go on to effectively deploying gentleness or processing failure until we discern our truer, deeper, lasting desires. But say we do that. Say we realize I do have a deep desire. I want more gratitude for what I have and less concern for what I don't. Or, you know, I want better focus at my work, and I want better restorative relaxation after. or I want a simpler life. Less unnecessary stuff crowding my head, less unnecessary stuff crowding my house. Or I do want to be part of something bigger than myself. I want to be part of healing my community. I want to be part of healing my world. Say we do that. With meditation, with self-awareness, we surface some deeper desire, some important aspiration. Well, again, motivation will not get us there. Willpower will not get us there. Any aspiration worthy of being an aspiration is too big to be attained by force of will. When I wrote that, I thought, somebody should write that down. Any aspiration worthy of being an aspiration is too big to be attained by force of will. But if we use the little bit of will that we get, and we use it to redesign our environment, that will get us to our aspirations. So we redesign our people environment. Who are the people that we engage with, that we interact with? Do that, and we will shift our values. We will shift our priorities. That is well documented. Redesign the physical space that we inhabit, and we will enhance our focus, or we will enhance our relaxation. Redesign the information that we let fill our minds. We change our thinking patterns. We do. Redesign our cupboards. We'll change our dietary habits, change the music that we listen to, and we change our emotional states. With thoughtful, intentional, environmental redesign, people, spaces, information, we can change even our core beliefs, core stories we tell ourselves and about the world. We can change our total worldview by changing our environment. I have seen it. I've done it in my own life. I didn't know that's what I was doing when I did. But we can do what Paul teaches us to do, to renew our minds. And we can do it by redesigning our environments. We build new relational patterns. We inhabit new spaces. We listen to new music. We watch different news, different programming. We take in different information. We eat different foods. Being human, we are wired to adapt to our environments. We are. So this is an important brain hack. Put thought and effort into, and put the little bit of willpower that we get into, environmental design. This is one of the ways that deep change does happen. Now, we'll talk about some specifics on this next week, but as we go, last quick thing. Our focus in this lesson has been how change happens in your life, in my life. But I've said all along, these are principles that scale up. They will scale up to social change as well. And I was planning to make that the last section of the lesson, but then I read one thing, and that led to another thing, and yeah, I want to do some more reading. So that'll be another lesson, and it will be coming soon. But for today, this environmental principle, it also scales up. And I say that because I want to underscore the importance of the One Wake work that we do together. We Americans have a story that we tell ourselves about upward mobility. And it's been a very justified story for a very long time. But not in all decades of our history has it been justified. It's been justified, it's been a story we could tell ourselves in the decades when we were, and we have done this very often, also creating the environment in which upward mobility could happen. But in many decades, particularly the last few, we've neglected that environment. And it turns out, when it comes to upward mobility, when it comes to breaking out of poverty, or when it comes to breaking out of an addiction cycle, or when it comes to doing better than the last generation did, mobility is a lot like that Samaritan story. It depends on the environment. So Harvard did a great big study overlaying social outcomes, economic outcomes onto maps, and discovered that generation after generation, the factor that most affects upward mobility, it's the state you live in, or it's the county that you live in. Sometimes it's even the neighborhood you live in. Now, in a complementary study, this one with foster children, every year that is spent in a more opportunity-rich environment increases the probability of upward mobility. Our environment affects us. Our environment affects all of us. So our One Wake clergy team was meeting with county commissioners this week. We were looking to deepen our working relationships around those three priorities, affordable housing, jobs, and public education. And we're far enough along as an organization that the work that we're doing now is the one tiny change, laying the foundation for the next tiny change, the incremental work. And that's not very flashy. But here's the thing. When we are doing that work, what we're doing is redesigning the environment of our county. You change the housing environments, and you change the job environments, and you change the school environments, and we affect deep, profound human change. So you heard the announcement. It was an invitation to get involved. I hope you will. If you forget, can't find the announcement, just use the Contact Us button. And if you are already involved, I want to encourage you, let's not grow weary in well-doing. This part of One Wake's work is a little bit incremental. Don't grow weary. I said earlier that it's hard to know the dividing line between environment and self. They are more interconnected than we realize. You change the one and you change the other. In my life, in your life, and in our community's lives, we change the environment and we change the emotion, we change the thoughts, we change the skills, we change the worldview, we even change our own identity. So if we want to affect change, we spend our little bit of willpower, our little bit of resolve focused on designing and redesigning our environments to create the outcomes that we want to create. And we do it in our own spaces where we live and work, where we share our lives with our people. We do it in our homes. We do it in our schools. We do it in our county. Human nature is not fixed. We can affect change. We can affect large change with considered environmental design and redesign. We can do that. And may we. May we use the little bit of willpower we get wisely. May we become good at, even masterful at, designing and redesigning environments. Amen. Well, if you would, please prepare your tithes and offerings. We all donate online now. And remember what I say all the time, everything that we invest in spiritual community has a great return on investment. Our time and our energy and our love and the dollars that it takes for us to be financially healthy, all of those return immeasurably. So let's invest well. If you get to keep your job, keep investing in community. And that being said, what are you thinking about? What is stirring up in your heart? And Gene, what are folks talking about, thinking about?
So let me start with a couple of comments. First, I had one, which is, how common is it to tailor the message or behavior to our perception of the audience and what are the desired outcomes? We're always reading the room, checking the temperature of the crowd. That, you know, that may serve its purpose in the moment, but maybe not in the greater scheme.
It doesn't get us to authentic self.
It may not. Yeah. Aunt Scioli says, whoa, Flea story just blew my mind.
What just blew her mind?
The flea story.
Oh, the flea story.
Yeah. Heather Lee Ludden
says... Wait a minute, before you go on from that. If you really want your mind to be blown, just do a Google search on epigenetics. Find out what happens to the human body and what gets passed. The dividing lines, we think, mind separate from body, it just is not two separate categories. They are an interconnected reality. And when we realize that experience and emotion of that experience affects what genes get turned off and what gets turned on, there's that experiment of what happened when the Dutch were invaded by the Nazis in World War II. And for, I think it was only 3 years, what happened when they existed on starvation rations. And then what happened to their children and then their grandchildren and their great-grandchildren. It is some crazy... It's some crazy shit, man. You ought to read this stuff on epigenetics.
So Heather Lee Ludden says, sort of explains all human history. Wendy Bassinger says, especially religion.
Let's see. I would like to know from Wendy, what part of religion? Now I'm curious because I've had a few chats with Wendy, and
you're not going to get that interaction at least right this moment.
If we were here in the room, I'd say, that sounds really interesting, Wendy. Tell me more.
So Heather Lund says, well, we can change religion all we want, but until we prioritize child rearing, a.k.a. parenting, we'll keep jumping out of the jar. And Ange Scioli says, yeah, those first 6 years are really 98% of the story of changing humanness.
Well, but if you got screwed up in your first 6 years, despair not. I got a little screwed up in my first 6 years, my first 16 years. And here's the thing. There are principles that are in place that will go to the places that we struggle with the most. And one of the primary ones is when we are not sufficiently loved when we are young. And I have seen that fundamentally change. We can do big change. It's crazy how much environment affects soul. You know, what does that word even mean? Spirit. I don't even know what those words even mean. But that deepest part of us is profoundly affected by changing the environment that we live in. All right, what else?
Let's see. Ange goes on and says, well, in one generation, I don't think that's going to work. Hence why willpower isn't going to work. Yeah. Bob Love says, one important component of environment is the group of people we associate with, and what are their values?
Pay attention. That's the second week in a row, Bob. You ought to pay attention to what Bob says. Here's what I would have said in my church growing up. Hear now the word of the Lord. Hear now the word of Bob. They're the same.
Let's see. Lucy Benison Lafitte says, can we create groups around intentional personal change? Tina Kleiberg responds, we already do worksheet groups, financial groups, and in intentional wellness. We can always do more.
But I was going to say that intentional wellness group. And by the way, did we just mention in the announcements the self-awareness practice groups, the Enneagram levels of change groups? My goodness, people, yes, we can create those changes. I will tell you one of the things that has been, it's too late to join now, but the next time we open up the floor for these to join, you ought to join one of these contemplative Zoom groups. I am surprised every time. All I do is agree with six people to Zoom once a week and for 45 minutes and say, ask two questions. Have you been steady in your practice? Tell me about the frequency, because we're all trying for a certain frequency. That makes me be more steady in my practice. That's important. But then the second question is, where are you growing? And because I know I'm going to be talking to those people on Friday mornings, I ask myself the question all week long, where am I growing? And it turns out that when I zero in on that, pay attention to that, I become more of a participant with that. And so the answer to Lucy's question is, everywhere you look, yes, we form groups to be able to do this kind of change dynamic with intention, recreating environment. We do it all the time. Yes, Lucy, yes. All right, one more.
So I want to give you two. First, Chris Grabe says he mentions Admiral McRaven's commencement speech, and I think it was from one of the service academies. And basically what he said is, if you want to change the world, start by making your bed. So that was one. Heather Lee Ludden asked a question, says, but does environment just confirm or challenge our fundamental values, or does it have the power to even overrule them?
The latter. It has the power to overrule our values. Now, it's a long, slow process, but so that book that I mentioned, Tiny Habits, I said it would be a great companion book for this whole lesson. There's a whole section in there on studies that have been done around, what's the other book? Around how environment affects the deepest parts of us. And then there's another book, what was it? I think it's called Willpower Doesn't Work. I'm sorry, I can't remember it. But maybe just Google it. There are so many studies. I mean, this has been kind of eye-opening for the world to come and realize how profoundly our environment affects us. So, yes, environment can change the deepest parts of who we are with, what we think about, what we listen to, what we read. Those things profoundly impact us. All right, my friends, if you would, put your hand on your heart and remember as we go that within us the inner light, within us the inner divine, within us carriers of the divine, whatever that massive reality is that we call the divine, it somehow shows up inside of us, which means that there's love and joy and peace and kindness and goodness, everything we need to be participants in reshaping our world. It is within us. So as you extend your other hand to our SETI, let's look for opportunities to share what's in us with the people that we live and work and go to school with, looking for opportunities to repair and heal our worlds. Amen. God bless you. We're dismissed. Why don't you check in the What Are You Thinking Zoom? See you next week. If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, we hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, commonthreadchurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page for your computer's browser, at the bottom of the page for your phones.